in Plattsburgh. The Sports Station, 101.3 ESPN.
The Red Sox officially have J.D. Martinez on their roster. Martinez, a five-year deal, $110 million. We knew that. We knew about the opt-out clause after the second year. Well, there's a wrinkle in that J.D. Martinez contract we didn't know about going into yesterday. Well, we'll get you that right at the outset here of the huddle. Ryan Donato, Bruins prospect, scored two more goals yesterday for Team USA in the Winter Olympics, and he helped the Americans advance to the quarterfinal round of the men's tournament. The women's team will play for the gold medal tomorrow night. It'll be 11:10 Eastern time. They'll take on Canada, and they've lost to the Canadians five consecutive times. UVM product of Montpelier native Amanda Pelkey is on Team USA's roster. The Buccaneers have released running back Doug Martin. Could he be a fit for the New York Giants? Well, that's all something to discuss here as we continue on throughout the NFL offseason. You're in the huddle, 101.3 ESPN, 101.3ESPN.com. We're always streaming, so take us anywhere on the 101.3 ESPN app.
The Huddle, powered by Reuben James, Main Street in Burlington. Find them online at rjsburlington.com. Now, here's The Huddle, live on 101.3 ESPN, 101.3 ESPN.com, and streaming worldwide on the 101.3 ESPN app.
Good afternoon. You're in the huddle right here, 101.3 ESPN, all unaccounted for. Brady's here, Rich is here, Artie's here. How you doing, handsome? What's going on, big boy? What's happening today?
Good. I considered swimming to work today.
It wasn't that bad. A little rain.
Well, you haven't seen my driveway.
Yeah, well, at least it gets rid of the snow, for crying out loud.
Oh, that's not a good thing. It's the ice that I'd like to get rid of.
Yeah, I almost slipped in the parking lot.
Did you really?
Yeah, I did.
Make sure you film it if you do.
I purposely put my phone in my pocket, because I'm afraid I'm going to slip and the phone's going to fly away and I won't be able to get to it. And I'll be screaming, help! And nobody's going to be able to hear me. And I'll be laying in the parking lot and Brady's going to be calling me going, where are you? Where are you? And I won't be able to reach the phone. And I'll be just laying there in the soaking wet until somebody comes by at like 7 o'clock when Brady gets off the air and helps me get up.
So you're more worried about wiping out and destroying your body, but you don't care about that aspect of it. You only care that your phone is okay.
Well, no, it's not that it's okay. I want to be able to reach it so I can call for help.
Right.
So I'm not laying out, help, I've fallen and I can't get up.
Right.
And lay there in the wet parking lot the whole day.
The worst phone experience I ever had was actually twofold. There was two separate bad experiences with phones that I had. Back when the flip phone was popular.
Love those things.
You mean last week?
Love that. Love the flip phone.
I love the flip phone. Love the flip phone too, but I was in college. I was a junior, and I was in, for some reason, in some kind of theater class, and I was having an extra credit assignment to go to a play on campus, and because all it does is snow in Oswego, everything outside was soaking wet. So I'm running late because I don't really care about this thing. I just want the extra credit. So I am flying. This play starts at 7. At like 6:59:30, I run into the building and am flying down the stairs and completely bit it because my shoes are wet. The stairs are wet from everyone else coming in. And I flew down like three separate stair steps.
Yeah.
And the phone broke in half.
Nice.
The flip phone broke in half.
Nice.
I ended up with a shattered elbow and had pieces of cartilage hanging out
nice.
Of my elbow.
Nice. Wow. Yes.
I
you're very clumsy.
I didn't realize that that my arm was completely bleeding through my clothes until midway through the first act when I realized, why is my shirt wet? And it's because it was completely bled through.
Oh.
So I spent the night in the emergency room
nice.
That night.
But did you get the extra credit?
Yes, because I'd stayed for the
there
whole play.
There you go. There you go.
And it gave me an excuse to skip class the next day.
How was the flip phone?
The flip phone was shattered in half.
Okay. That doesn't necessarily mean it's no good.
No, it was no good. And then the other one I had was 3 days before graduation. Graduation was on a Saturday. I was drunk on a Wednesday night, and I was walking into my dorm room or into my dorm building, and I went up the elevator, and in a freak thing that could never happen again if I tried, I pulled my phone out of my pocket, fumbled it,
and it went right down the
it fell
crack.
Down the crack where the elevator slides open.
I don't think you could place it down that
so,
thing.
So then what's even better about this is that the next day I wake up. Like I say, I was drunk, but like I was definitely buzzed, but it was not that drunk. And so I wake up. And I go down to the front desk. I'm like, hey, can I talk to the maintenance people? Probably my elevator or my phone fell to the bottom of the elevator shaft. So we go down and we look and they go, yeah, your phone's actually in between like levels.
Oh.
So it's just riding up and down. So
you couldn't get it?
I couldn't get it because it couldn't be reached. The only way it could have been gotten is if it had actually fallen through.
Oh.
So then at this point, because it's now Thursday, the only people left in the building are seniors, and I was one of like the seven seniors that actually lived in the dorm rather than a house. So I started riding up and down the elevator, calling my phone, seeing if I could hear it, hoping to be able to get it. And I, you know, eventually, like, people would get in the elevator and wonder why I was riding it consecutively, or like, why was I going from floor one to two to three to four to five?
Did you get it? No.
No, I did not.
Did you get, I mean, maybe it was left on something where you could listen to conversations on the in the elevator.
The battery died, I'm sure, quickly after. But so that was a good story. Yeah.
Wow.
No, wow. I don't think I have anything like that. I just remember being a moron with my phone. I remember my kid was going for his driving test, and he you use your own car, and he got into the car with the driving, who gives him the test. And I said, okay, I'm going to get on my phone a little bit. And I would call my friend, and it kept cutting out. I'm yelling, are you effing stupid? What kind of phone do you have? Needless to say, every time I called, it was going to the car where my kid was taking the driving test with the driving instructor, and they could hear me cursing, going, are you stupid? Answer the phone, you idiot.
Oh, because the Bluetooth problem.
The Bluetooth.
Can you imagine hearing Arnie in the background?
My goodness.
No distraction there.
They had to drive back, and the driving instructor said, if you do that one more time, your kid fails. I'm like, oh, I'm so sorry. I'm an idiot. I didn't even realize that. What a dope I am,
man. My poor kid flunked her only attempt at a driver's test, and 8 years later, she still doesn't have a license and has no desire to have one.
She does not have a driver's license.
No. Should you get one, though?
I'm sure she could pass it easily, but she just doesn't want one.
I'm not so sure.
Doesn't she live in a car? Like,
she lived in the back of a truck with her boyfriend in Tahoe last summer, but of course there's 9,000 feet of snow there, so they had to move into an actual place.
So does she walk to work?
I have no idea. I would assume that her boyfriend brings her to the ski area where she works. He also works there, too.
Okay. Well, then that makes it a little better. Yeah.
But isn't that weird? I mean, the trauma of not passing 8 years ago.
Send her back.
I'd love to, but it's her life. She's not 12. I can't tell
her
what
to back.
Do anymore.
Send her back. Get a license.
Believe me, I've tried.
My goodness, man. How do you not have a driver's license? You need ID. She's got to have ID and stuff. Got to walk around with that.
She has one. Yeah,
okay.
I'm
got to
sure
have something
fine.
Like that, for crying out loud. All right. A busy, busy Tuesday. Lots going on this week, but what do we got going on the show today?
Well, trivia this week, remember?
Yes.
Wednesday.
Tomorrow.
That's tomorrow at City Sports Grill. Rich, you're hosting that one?
I can't wait.
So Rich will be there. Friday, we're broadcasting live from Goodwater Brewery in Williston. It's our second leg of our 101.3 ESPN Winter Craft Beer Tour. I think they got 9 beers, 4 of which are in cans, and it's another place that I have been, and it's another place that's quite fun, and the goal is to not lose the phone at the end of it.
You've been to all these places we go to now.
Yeah, yes, I have.
Yes.
Well, Jess took me on a brewery tour for my birthday, so I've stopped at First Republic where we were on Friday, and then we went to Goodwater, which is where we're going this Friday.
And I have had many a beer over the years with the guy who runs that place, so this should be a fun Friday.
So that'll be a great spot on Friday. Again, come on out at 4 o'clock. As for what's coming up on the show today, Tom Karen of Nesson, wonder what we'll talk about. He'll join us at 4:35. We'll talk also a little Bruins with him.
Yeah.
Giancarlo Stanton speaks for the first time at Yankees camp. We'll get into that. Ed O'Bannon, former NCAA champion basketball player who sued the NCAA and won. He'll join us at 5:20 to share his story. We'll talk about Ryan Donato making a major impact at the Winter Olympics. Who is he and why should you care? But first, the J.D. Martinez contract. We knew the details yesterday. We get a third detail today. In addition to it being a 5-year deal for $110 million. In addition to there being an opt-out after the second year, there is also an opt-out after the third year for Martinez also. So I think no matter how you slice this, the Red Sox made out really well. I think Martinez makes out well, and I think the Red Sox make out well. This is great.
I couldn't agree more. You heard my reaction yesterday. You told me to stop dancing when I heard. I mean, it was just, this is right in the middle of that lineup. This is absolutely what they needed. And I can't remember what it was, but it was something about he's the best hitter in baseball behind Mike Trout over the last 4 years as far as certain numbers
go. Was it the Tim Kurkjian?
Yeah.
Yeah, so Tim Kurkjian talking today on ESPN.
Few people hit it out of the park like Martinez. He's the only player in Major League history to hit 45 homers in a season of fewer than 120 games. And if you look over the last 4 seasons at batting average, on base, slugging, and home runs, the only player that can match J.D. Martinez's numbers in those four categories is Mike Trout, who has been the best player in the game over that time. So this was a case the Red Sox had to add him. He's the perfect add.
Well, I'm glad you played that first. It kind of makes my point in what I was going to get to.
Oh, I thought you were going to talk about Twisted Sister playing in the background. He had to scream over it.
Didn't really realize that part. But my thing is this. How is this a good contract for J.D. Martinez? I got to think that I'm pretty damn upset at this contract. If I'm going to compare it, if you just called me, if I heard it correctly, second best hitter in the last 4 years to Trout, all the home runs, and is nobody's had more home runs in 119 games. Was that the stat there too?
Yeah, he had more home runs in 64 games with Arizona than any member of the Red Sox had all season.
But take the first or the second stat where he said that he was the best hitter to Mike Trout over the last 4 years. You're the best hitter to Mike Trout the last 4 years, but you can only get a 2-year, then 3-year opt-out. Hosmer got, 5+3, and it's his option, right? So for the most part, he can get 8 years.
Yeah, but Martinez is also 2 and 3.
Well, which contract's better, Hosmer or Martinez? And
For flexibility, I think it's Martinez. I mean, they're going to give the guy $30 million for the next 2 years, and then he has the opt-out if he wants, and an opt-out the third year.
No, I don't think this was a Martinez-friendly contract. I think if he could do it, he would have the same type of contract that Hosmer had.
But Hosmer's 2 years younger and has a track record of playing every game
Wait a minute. Now we're going to go with the track record. I'll give you what Rich just brought up, the 4 years, the best hitter of the last 4 years. That's not what you've done for me. What you've done for me lately, 4 years is a long time to be the second best hitter in baseball.
Okay, well, I'm also telling you, Arnie, that Hosmer has played nearly every game of his career, okay?
Well, okay, then warning flags? If there's a warning flag here, that's fine.
Martinez is 2 years older.
Right.
He's 30 years old. Hosmer's 28. Right. Martinez has played... He missed, he played 123 games in 2014, that's missing 40 games. He played...
What did he miss for? Was it all injury or was some of it sitting out also?
It was injury.
Someone was sitting it out.
He has a history.
2016, he missed 40 games. 2017, he missed 40 games.
Right.
So he's missed 40 games or more in 3 of the last 4 seasons.
Right.
So you throw that in with age, these contracts are pretty comparable.
Okay, well, I think 8 years, if I'm wrong, 8 years guaranteed to the 3 year where he can opt out. I don't think that's comparable at all.
It's not 8 years guaranteed.
Well, 5 and 3, right?
Okay, so Martinez he can be there for 5 years.
Well, there's a big difference between 5 and 8 because that's what he was holding out for to begin with.
Well,
he wanted up to 7.
This is a contract that is more split than you're realizing. I'm not saying it's all favor of the Red Sox, but it's a good deal for both sides.
Think about
this. If you're the Red Sox, we went through this yesterday, but if you're the Red Sox, you get arguably the best years of Martinez. You're going to get him while he's productive.
Right.
We can all agree on that.
Right.
You get him at a relatively affordable rate. If he plays really well, then he opts out after 2 or 3 years, and then he goes and gets big money again. Well, that's what he wants.
Well, that's the difference between us. Why should they get him at a formidable rate? When you're the second best hitter over the last 4 years, and when you're putting up big numbers like that, I don't care if I did miss 30 or 40 games. You're not getting me at a discounted rate because I missed 40 games. I'm the second best hitter in baseball over the last 40 years. You don't get a discount for that, as far as I'm concerned.
Robinson Cano is a Hall of Famer. Do you like the 10 years, $240 million deal that he got, $24 million guaranteed? We're talking about Martinez getting $25 million over the first two. That's a higher annual value than Robinson Cano's got.
I wish we had Scott Boras on today because he's the one that wanted him to sit out and not sign. That's why we had a problem with the free agents. Hey, this isn't me talking. This was Martinez telling his agent, I'm not signing until I get more money. Those aren't my words. That's what he's going to tell Scott Boras.
But at some point, he has to sign. It's either that or he spends the summer playing golf.
He's going to sign the one-year deal.
And making nothing.
Right, he's going to sign the one-year deal and said, I'll do this again.
So he basically signed a two-year deal, and then he can decide what he wants to do.
All I'm saying is I don't think it's as great for him as you guys are making it out.
I am. Right. I think it's a very Red Sox-friendly contract. I was shocked at this
I would agree with
deal.
You on that.
What if, I mean, as you just said, Brady, he's missed 40 games per season in 3 of the last 4 seasons. What if he's just constantly hurt over the next 2 years?
Yeah, I think that this is a split deal. I think this is good for the Red Sox because they get the best of Martinez and they get it at a non-David Price and Dustin Pedroia crippling contract nature.
I'm not arguing
So that is good for the Red Sox. As for Martinez, if he plays great, then he opts out and does this all again in 2 years or 3 years and gets more big money and ends up with more contract value than what 5 for $110 would have been.
That's the key word, if he plays great.
But if he doesn't play great, then he still gets 5 years, $110 because he opts into his deal, which is his choice.
Right, and I would have told the Red Sox, my worth over the last 4 years proves to you, and if it doesn't prove to you what I can do, then I don't need your damn contract. I'll go somewhere else. I want this. This is how much I want guaranteed. I want the 5-year guaranteed and the 3-year option on my part. And I don't care if I'm 2 years older than Hosmer. I'm a better hitter and I put up better numbers. That I'm just telling you how I would come after it if I was Martinez. And I know I'm right because that's exactly what Scott Boras did. He said, we're not signing a 5-year deal. It's going to be 7. And they tried to hold out and play games with the Red Sox.
As our texter reminds us, and he's right about this. There were no other suitors. You're not going to bid against yourself.
That was another thing. Golf course. I sent Rich an article just now. Did I send it to you too? And I was looking up the stats. I don't think he's as good as everybody's making him out to be. He had a year and a half, I believe, of putting up really great numbers. Now I'm surprised when who was that said that it was
Tim Kirchhoff.
I was shocked.
Well, it's slugging and
shocked.
Things like that.
I'm still shocked because you have 45 and 33, and then the other 2 years you have under 25 home runs. Right. To make that into the top five, the second best hitter in baseball, and he only had over 100 RBIs twice.
Right. But the reason,
so I'm shocked.
The reason for these numbers, Arnie, is because of the injuries. I mean, like we just said, he's missed 40 games in 3 of the last. I mean, if you look at his numbers,
I am.
He missed, he played all of 2015, drove in 100 runs with nearly 40 home runs. But, I mean, last year was the real, in 2017, he only played 119 games, hit 45 home runs.
We're also,
I mean, that's a home run every 2.5 games.
We're also talking about a shift in the way contracts are valued. Look, I am not as high on Hosmer as his contract would suggest the Padres are.
That's fair enough.
But nonetheless, Hosmer won a gold glove last year. Hosmer plays defense, hits for average, and gives you some power. And for what, you might not want to assign a monetary value to it, but is a, quote, great leader, is a, quote, great clubhouse guy. Now, that matters to some people. It doesn't matter to others.
Who would you rather have, Hosmer and his contract right now that the Padres gave him, or J.D. Martinez and the contract that the Red Sox gave him?
Apples and oranges. National League team, I'd rather have Hosmer because he can play defense. Martinez can't.
Okay. Because, wait a minute, National League team that he can play defense?
Yes, Hosmer knows how to play defense and can be an everyday player. Martinez cannot be.
So you don't think the two are comparable? Because there was always talk that if you don't sign Martinez, you can always go out and get Hosmer, right?
If I was an American League team, I'd rather have Martinez knowing I can utilize him at DH. Yep. If I was a National League team, I'd rather have Hosmer knowing he's a plus defender and Martinez would be a major liability in the field.
I'd rather have Martinez just based on the contract. Because I know I'm in for 8 years with Hosmer. And right there and then I'm drawing the line. Right there and then. I don't know how many numbers he's going to put up compared to Martinez, but I'm stopping right there with the money. I can't go ahead and I can't commit 8 years to somebody no matter how good they are.
But at least
give it to Judge.
At least he's going to be 36.
Yeah, well, that's true too. Well,
he's only going to be 36. If he stays all 8 years, he's going to end this at 36, whereas Martinez is going to end his deal at 36 in 5 years.
Well, you know what? I'm dying to see. But what about the fact that I brought up he only had a really good year and a half of power numbers? Is that wrong, too?
Then you're making our point that he made out okay also.
Well, except for Rich bring up the thing that he's the second best hitter, which I'm shocked. I got a question if he's really
It's all games played based, slugging percentage, things like that.
No, he said the second best hitter behind Trout
in those the last four categories. Years.
Well, in what?
Slugging percentage, home runs per at bat.
RBIs is part of that, is it not?
You want me to play it again?
Well, yeah. I mean, that's some serious numbers. What else do you want him to put up when you're paying these guys? Go ahead.
Very few people hit it out of the park like Martinez. He's the only player in Major League history to hit 45 homers in a season of fewer than 120 games. And if you look over the last four seasons at batting average, on base, slugging, and home runs, the only player that can match J.D. Martinez's numbers in those four categories is Mike Trout, who has been the best player in the game over that time. So this was a case the Red Sox had to add him. He's the perfect add.
Yeah. Okay, so batting average, which he's hit over 300 four straight years. People get lost in Martinez's power numbers because last year especially, they're pretty ridiculous per at bat. But OBP, crucial. Slugging percentage, obviously, because he's played so few games because of injury, and home runs.
I don't want to change this up because I know you want to break real quick. I just want to say this because I don't know if we're going to bring it up. I want Price off the team now. I want him off the damn team now. I don't want to see him in. I don't want to see him in spring training.
Good luck with
that. I want him gone. I don't care how much of the contract I got to eat. When you're going to start to be a cancer to the newest guy on the team by telling him that the fans are going to boo you and expect the fans to boo you, I want you gone. I don't need that right now. I don't care if he's joking, he's not joking, he's saying it with a smile. I want him off the team. When you start to say you were positive, and then you're coming out and say, oh, I told Jay, he was talking to, I think it was Nightingale, I forget who it was. It's all over the Boston Globe and the Boston papers. He goes, I told him, you better warn it, you watch out, the fans are going to boo you. You know what? Get out of here, you cancer. I'm done with you. Now you get the brand new guy. He's not even here a day. He's not even here probably. And he goes, oh, I told him you'll love the guys in the dugout, but the fans are going to boo you. You know what? Let the fans boo you when you get the hell out of here. I'm done with you.
So if you're John Henry, you will write a check for $160 or whatever million dollars.
I'm making $150 if somebody will take him for $10 million. How about that? Somebody split the money. I want him gone. I don't need that. Why, you need that because of money?
No, but he's in a situation where he's untradeable. There's nothing you can do about it.
Well, give him his money and get him. He'll do more harm than he will good. Brady, you don't buy. Is that, you know, you played. You want to cancel like that around? You tell me.
No, but he said it with a smile. He lured him there. He helped lure him there.
And then he went on to say stuff about Big Poppy after that too.
He said that Big Poppy got booed.
Yeah. Well, you know what though? He just looks for the negative. He says he looks for the positive because his college coach was positive and this guy was positive. And he even says his wife, when she gets negative, he corrects her. I didn't even like that the way he said that. I don't like his attitude.
You don't like anybody on the team.
I want him gone. Tell me I'm wrong.
Massive overreaction.
Really?
Look, I agree with the attack on Eckersley in the plane last year. That sucked. That was bad, and he got exactly what he deserved. A lot of crappy press out of that. But give him another chance, and you know what? You're stuck with him. There's nothing you can do.
Brady, what's coming up next?
I don't know. I'm so mad at you. What is coming up?
What
now?
Did I say now? Because it's J.D. Martinez?
No,
hate all Boston sports teams.
We're going to talk about an interesting comment someone made on the Patriots, and the Bruins have a prospect with a dilemma.
Next, right here on 101.3 ESPN.
Phone lines are now open. Get ready to call in at 802-655-6672. This is The Huddle with Rich, Arnie, and Brady on 101.3 ESPN.
All right, good afternoon, everybody. You're in The Huddle right here at 101.3 ESPN. By the way, just a random tweet a friend of mine sent out. He goes, if he was commissioner, first thing he would do is make the Mariners change their name back to the Pilots. I saw that, and I thought about Brady. I'm like, I just saw that. I thought that in my brain.
That's really funny. It's really funny, except because the Pilots are the Milwaukee Brewers, actually.
Wait, what were their names? Yeah. That's what he said. He said the Pilots, though. That's what he said.
Right, but the Pilots became the Brewers. They were never the Mariners.
Okay, my bad.
Your friend he's wrong.
His name's Grego.
Okay, tell him he's wrong.
His name is Grego. You get so mad at us when we talk, when
Brady's
we argue with you baseball.
Today,
well, that's his sport. He hates when I attack him on baseball and by the way, what did I say that made you so upset about J.D. Martinez? I'm curious.
I don't know. Okay. Everything, for the most part.
That's pretty much everything.
That comes out of your mouth.
Mad because I had all of these great points to talk about, and you just came on with bluster and didn't address any of them.
Oh, no. I only hit that at 18 past the hour at the price thing.
It's not even that. No, it's just all of the rest. I had all this stuff about Dombrowski and the deal and all that.
I mean, with the contract, I guess we could talk more about that later
on. Luckily, we only have, 7 weeks till the season starts.
All right, what's going on in this segment, Brady? Go ahead.
So, interestingly enough, and I don't want to spend a ton of time on mock drafts because I hate mock drafts, and I hate them even more prior to the combine, which is next week. But I was going through CBS Sports, and they had the Patriots taking a wide receiver with the number 31 pick in the draft. And I thought to myself, if there's one position the Patriots don't need, it's wide receiver, especially in the first round. I'm like, if the Patriots take a wide receiver, this kid or any other wide receiver, what an awful decision that would be.
I saw that, and I have absolutely no idea. You're right. I mean, I'd rather take a punter in the first. I mean, that was the most ridiculous thing. This team needs a pass rusher. Apparently, they're going to need a cornerback.
They need three offensive linemen.
Which wide receiver did they say they were taking?
The kid out of it was either Texas A&M. I think it was Texas A&M.
Because I was going to say if it was Ridley out of Alabama, but he's a top 10 pick.
No, not
if
him.
Somehow he was going to drop that, I'm like, yeah, take him. But he was going to be a top 10 pick, so I wasn't quite sure.
Edelman, Hogan, I mean, and guys that hardly saw the field this year, guys like Malcolm Mitchell and Kenny Britt, who they picked up.
Edelman's going to be back.
Yeah, I mean, what do you do with guys like Dorsett and Brandon Cooks is obviously going to be back. So.
You probably want to re-sign Amendola. We think that he's going to take pay cuts galore to stay there. And they've got this kid who was on their practice team named Riley McCarron, who no one's ever heard of, but he's supposed to be the next of the slot receivers who do well in New England. If there's one thing, you know, it's funny too, because Mike Clay, who we met at ESPN headquarters, who's their fantasy guru when it comes to wide receivers, he put out a list of basically ranked teams in terms of need at every position. So he wasn't saying the Patriots are the best at wide receiver, but he said that they were the team that needs a wide receiver the fewest of anybody else.
Yes.
Like, they are the last ranked team in terms of wide receiver need. Again, not that they're the best, but the numbers are there. They don't need one.
No, and yet, would it surprise you if Belichick went in that direction?
Yes.
Some of the things he's done with draft day have just been so bizarre to me over the years. And in spite of all of that, they keep winning.
I'm not the draft expert, but I'm looking up the wide. I think there's only two scheduled for the first round. I mentioned Ridley of Alabama and Sutton, the kid out of SMU, who is supposed to be a top 15 pick, maybe top 20. And he's not worthy of trading up for, even if he falls into your lap. I don't know if that's such a steal. Am I wrong on that? Are the only two wide receivers I'm thinking are going to be first round selections? So I don't know where this great wide receiver everybody's talking about that you want to go ahead and get in the first round.
I don't get it. I mean, they've got, what, three picks in the first 62 or whatever it is? Defense, yeah. defense.
Offensive lineman.
All right. We'll take one.
I'm going to go corner. I don't know how deep it is at corner.
Well, you want Eric Rowe lining up all season long next year?
I'm going to have to address that. Plus, you have to decide, and Belichick knows better than us, who he wants to sign as free agents, which would take care of the draft for him. You know, he's probably thinking, all right, we can get this guy at free agency, we can get this guy, so let's not worry about him in the draft of that position at the draft. So that changed things dramatically also. So I'm kind of curious which way they're going to go, but I know it's not going to be wide receiver.
Yeah, I wouldn't want him to go wide receiver too. Another thing here that I wanted to get to before we get to Tom Caron, we can ask him about this also. So the Olympics going on, obviously, men's hockey tournament. Team USA wins last night. They advanced to the quarterfinals. And Ryan Donato, 21-year-old kid out of Harvard, he does the thing again for the U.S. He scores two goals. He is a Bruins prospect. He is going to be faced with a really, really interesting decision here. He's got three options. One, he could go pro right after the Olympics, leave Harvard and go pro and be in the Bruins organization. Two, he could finish out the season. It's his junior year. Finish out the season and sign with the Bruins at the conclusion of the college season. Or three, he can go back to college play as a senior and be with the Bruins next year. This is really, you talk about momentum that this kid has right now.
What a nice choice.
I mean, this is an interesting decision.
There's some of the kids have that same decision. The goalie, matter of fact, for Colgate? They let him leave so he can become the goalie for the Canadian team. He may win the gold medal. He may not even come back either. He's been drafted, and he may not come back to Colgate right now. He may just say, you know, I'm done with it. I'm going to go straight to the NHL.
And the other thing that comes into play, this is we're talking about a Harvard education here. I mean, how much of that plays in?
His dad's the head coach.
Yeah, well, that too. But, I mean, are you going to walk away from a Harvard education to play? I mean, obviously he wants to play hockey, but at least I would think he'd finish out this year and then sign.
I would think he'd finish out this year, too, because his dad's the head coach. I think he'd probably want to play in the NCAA tournament if they make it. I know it's only, the top 16 or something like that.
Yeah.
So maybe if they don't make it or somehow get eliminated in their conference tournament, then he decides to leave. But I think he'll want to stick around for his dad and play in the tournament.
Well, I don't think his dad's going to put that pressure on him. I bet his dad is going to be more of like, look, I'm not going to try to hold you back from your dreams. Now, maybe his dad will want to play, maybe he'll want to play with his dad. But you start thinking about, well, what's more valuable? a couple more college games or getting into the AHL structure quicker so that maybe you can have a Charlie McAvoy-type impact in the playoffs?
If graduation means anything, I'd probably want to go ahead and finish out the semester and then...
Well, you're not going to graduate until next
right,
year.
Right, I know that, but at least I'll finish it out. If you leave now, you're going to you just chop another half semester off or a semester off.
And as far as moving forward, Harvard's 13-10-4. I mean, do you come back to try to win a national championship with a team that's three games over?
What's their record?
13-10-4.
I thought it was better than that.
Well, they're better in the league.
Okay, that's what it is. Then.
They're better in the ECAC.
No, then maybe he doesn't want to play in the tournament. Maybe they're not going to make the tournament, when it's all said and done.
I think there are people out there who are saying, well, look at what McAvoy did last year, and he came straight from the college ranks and was able to play and help out. Here's the thing I would caution fans about that. What's been the one knock on the Bruins that we've said about them? And Joe Haggerty was on our station last week, Bruins Insider for NBC Sports Boston, and he said, the Bruins are really, really small. They need big physical players going into the playoffs. And at the trade deadline, they're going to acquire or try to acquire big physical players. Donato's 6'1", and he's a slight goal scorer. They have young guys who are in that same build. And no matter how good he is, I don't know how he gets on the ice early enough here to make it worth it.
And that's the thing. This team, everybody's raving about how fast they are. And, I mean, Donato can fly too, but at least he's got a little size. I mean, he's 6'1", 180, which isn't really much. And I know the Bruins made a minor trade today for a Rangers defenseman for O'Gara and a third-round pick. So
who's the 6'6 guy in Buffalo? Is it Myers?
Oh, Tyler Myers.
Oh, gosh, he would be good for Boston, would he not? I mean, Jesus. And you see how the way he shoots penalty shots? He just skates in, Brady, and just fires it. Doesn't try to make any. He's just boom.
Like Fulton in the Mighty Ducks series.
Oh, yes. He comes as close as he can, and he just fires it at you. I love that.
The rest of the NHL must be going, oh, man, another one. I mean, you look at this list of Bruins that have really excelled this year. I mean, DeBrusque and Danton Heinen and Schaller and all these guys getting it done. It's like, I don't know who you're going to move out of the way to bring him in if they do.
Tom Caron's going to join us. I want Brady. Brady, you could ask him all the contract questions you want. We'll have a little baseball and other stuff with Tom Caron. That's coming up next right here on 101.3 ESPN.
What crazy thing will Arnie say next? Find out now on The Huddle with Rich and Arnie on 101.3 ESPN.
All right, good afternoon, everybody. You're in the huddle. 101.3 ESPN, guys, right out to the TikTok Jewelers guest line. Joining us now, as he does every week, it's our buddy from Nesson. It's Tom Caron. How you doing, TC?
Good. How are you doing, boys?
Good. Hey, well, first of all, I got to know, do you have to take a pay cut now that games are going to be like 4 minutes shorter? What are you going to do with your time now that they shorten the game up?
Don't bring that up with anybody from Nesson. Let's keep that on the down.
Do you like that, TC? We were debating with Brady. He got all salty because he's a baseball purist. Anything to speed up the game, TC. Anything to speed up the game.
Yeah, no. I don't know about anything, but this is a move in the right direction. I wanted more. I wanted the pitch clock. I really did.
Wow.
It works in the minor leagues. It shaved about 13, 14 minutes off games down there, and pitchers adapt to it pretty quickly. But this is a good first step. Gary Sanchez isn't going to be able to go out to the mound every four pitches now. He's going to have to stay behind the plate. And I do think this is at least acknowledging that it's time to start tilting it back the other way. This, I truly believe, and if you look at just the 205 clock between innings, if they stick to that and the first pitch is thrown at 205, they'll shave 7 or 8 minutes off a game. And so that gets you back under 3 hours on average, which is good. Under 3 hours is where you need to be. And then the mound visits, that's not about the length of game. It's not going to save a ton of time. It's just about the boredom in the game. I don't want to be watching guys standing around the mound talking. I want to watch pitches thrown and pitches hit and play baseball. So, yeah, I think it's a good idea.
Bravo. And do you think, TC, we're ever getting to the point? To me, the biggest culprit in all of this are pitching changes in the last two or three innings of games. I mean, specialists, lefty-lefty. Righty's got to come in, pitch to one guy, and then get out if he's pitching to a lefty with the next guy. Do you think we're ever getting to the point where they're going to address that?
I don't know, but I'd go for that, too. I mean, I told you guys before, the Caron manifesto on how to speed things up. Okay, number one, you need a pitch clock. Number two, limit mound visits. They've already done that. Number three, shorten the time between innings. They came halfway to doing that yesterday. Number four on my plan is any pitcher who comes to the game needs to face at least two batters. And that, to me, would be a small step forward because you can't go lefty-righty, lefty-righty, and you have four commercial breaks during one half inning. And then somebody was throwing this idea around, and I think I've come to like it. I don't know if you've heard this, this whole idea that if you're down by 4 or 5 runs in the eighth inning, you get to take your bats twice. In other words,
yes,
you bat, you're losing by 5 runs in the eighth inning, you get your 3 outs, and if you don't catch up, then you get your next 3 outs, and then the game's over.
Yes.
The team doesn't have to waste its at bat. I kind of like that.
I love that.
Boy, that's pretty drastic.
I love that.
Look, I like a lot of what TC said. I'll ignore the last point, but I
yeah, that's a little
and
weird.
You put 2 guys on base in the extra innings, yeah, and you only play 7 innings, and you only play,
yes,
150 games,
yeah, all right? Look, I'm for allowing having pitchers throw to 2 batters. But, TC, this made me so angry yesterday. I'm not okay with limiting the number of mound visits. I know it seems rudimentary. I know, oh, they're pros, they should know this. But what about things like bunt coverages? Who's got who on the double play? What if the infielder doesn't speak the same language as the pitcher who doesn't speak the same language as the catcher? I think you're running a risky slope here, and you're going to get a lot of communication gaffes here because people don't want to actually go talk to the mound.
Brady, you watch football, right?
Yep. Yeah, and the people have huddles there, TC.
And sometimes the defense changes what they're doing, okay? Bill Belichick doesn't get to run out and tell Tom Brady, hey, this is a different defense now. Have you got this okay? Is there anything you need to talk about? There's no other sport.
They have a headset, TC.
To run out and talk to the guy on the field. The guy's throwing a free throw. Nobody runs out. And Popovich doesn't get to run out and tell Tim Duncan, hey, you know, listen, we really need you to make this free throw now, okay? So concentrate. It's, to me, it's like any other sport. It's a timeout. You get a limited number of timeouts. Use them at your peril.
Well, I'll move on to J.D. Yeah. Martinez in a second, but I'm going to end you on this one, TC, now that I'm all worked up again. At the free throw line, when they got there's one guy shooting. There's also 4 or 5 other people off the line talking to their coach about what's coming next. And Tom Brady has a headset to talk with, ooh, the coaches. So I don't agree
all right,
with
all right,
that.
Wear a headset. I don't care. Three guys standing around the mound.
All right, TC, let's move.
I got to wait for all this stuff to end before I can start the postgame show. All right, let's move it around a little bit.
I love
all
it.
Right, the team signs J.D. Martinez. Your take overall on the deal.
Yeah.
I love the contract. I think it's great for the Red Sox. I think it's pretty good for Martinez also. What's your read on the numbers, years, etc.?
Yeah, I think it's a good deal for the Red Sox. I do think the way it got tweaked, and we're assuming this, we don't know this, but the fact that now it's a little more front-loaded, it's $50 million the first 2 years, $72 million if he opts out at the 3 years, whatever it is, you know, it's $19 at the end. So if he sticks around at the end, it's less of a commitment for the Red Sox, and he's got some security. If he wants to get out of here after 3 years, it will have been, you know, what, about $23.5, $24 million. I think it's important that the 3-year span, which is what really is important here, the average, I think, was $22.5 million, which means he's making as much or more than Hanley Ramirez. And you know Scott Boras wasn't going to let him come here for less than Hanley Ramirez is making on this team. So I think in the end, you know, they got a deal that they could save face with. It's not the 7 years, $210 million, but he wasn't worth that. And it proved that out, because nobody else was offering him that. So I think the Red Sox player got the player they wanted, and they got him for the price they wanted, and I think that's what every team wants to do.
You know, TC, let me put this next question into proper perspective. If you were single and you were dating, let's say my ex, and I went up to you and said, boy, you're dating the worst girl in the world, it'd probably get you upset. Why does Price have, and did he say it with a grain of salt? Did he say it with a smile? Price already saying, oh, the fans are going to boo you, J.D. Martinez. They're going to boo you, this and that. Why did he just be quiet? What's going on here? Am I making too much of this or what?
Yeah, I don't know, and I wasn't in there when he said it, so I can't really speak to whether he was joking around or what
right.
he was saying.
Right.
I was tied up doing something else. I would have liked to hear the delivery, because by and large, you know, I've liked the way Price has been behaving and sort of handling himself down here. So, yeah, that catches me a little bit off guard, because I you know, you hate to hear that, because even if he's joking around,
yeah.
why get going? Why
right.
do anything that's going to stir the hornet's nest and get the fans? You try to win them back over.
Right.
Don't put yourself at odds with them.
All right, so J.D. Martinez will go in, what, the 3 spot? And are you buying the Hanley
yeah,
Ramirez?
Alex Cora told us this morning that Hanley's his number 3 hitter.
Okay.
And we said, well, will that be the case in a few days? He said, yeah, we'll see. But I don't think he says that without thinking through. But anyway, 3 or 4, yeah, your point.
My point is Hanley, are you buying into what he's saying? I was on TB12 all winter. I came in. I've lost 15 pounds. And I don't care about how many at-bats I get. I just want to win. I mean, have we heard this before from him, or do you buy that?
Well, he definitely looks better. He's lost weight. There's no doubt about that. You know, he's looked more like a linebacker. Now he looks like a baseball player. Whether it's TB12 or not, he's definitely got himself in better baseball shape, it looks like. You know, listen, someone's going to lose some at-bats now. And where that goes, we'll see. I mean, if Hanley's going to be your number three hitter, that means Mitch Moreland's not playing. So somebody's got to play first. Somebody's got to be DH. I assume J.D. Martinez will occasionally get in the outfield, giving a Jackie Bradley Jr. a little bit of a break or something. So I don't know. If I'm Hanley now, I'm feeling a lot less confident about getting that 497 plate appearances I need to vest next year. So I don't know if we've heard this all before, but I do think he's feeling like he's got something to prove, and his shoulder that has been surgically repaired, he believes is going to allow him to have a better season in 2018.
Tom Karen of Nesson with us here on the Huddle. TC, what about Bogaerts hitting third? I don't see him as a power hitter, but he's a 315 career hitter in the three spot. Why not him three?
I like Bogaerts in the three spot. Listen, they've got some tough decisions to make, and they're good decisions to make. But if you're married to Betts 1 and Benintendi 2, now you got to start thinking, who's my three? If he says it's Ramirez, then that would mean, I assume, Martinez behind him, and then you got Bogaerts after that. Well, you just went four of your first five hitters are right-handed. So now, I mean, that's why Moreland, I think, has to get some time in here ahead of Hanley, especially against right-handed pitchers, because you got to balance that out a little bit. I think there's a real chance that, at least at the start of the season, if Xander Bogaerts finds himself down in the sixth or seventh,
wow,
which means they're a pretty thick lineup. You know what I mean? That's not the worst thing in the world. Come on, Eduardo Nunez. He's batting first or second a lot last year. He might be ace in this lineup when it's all said and done. So the arrival of Martinez is certainly going to shake that lineup up.
And what do you make of Tom Werner and John Henry yesterday saying the Red Sox have the best rotation in the American League when all healthy? I think there could be 3 to 4 rotations on par or better than the Red Sox.
It's interesting. I like the Red Sox rotation. I think there's a better big three, again, when healthy, like you said. Chris Sale's your ace. You put him up against anybody. If David Price is healthy, he's a pretty darn good number two. And, you know, Porcello, the Cy Young Award year was probably an aberration, but I don't think he's as bad as a 17 loss year either. So if he's just somewhere in the middle, he's a pretty good number three. Now you talk about Eduardo Rodriguez. If healthy, then that's a big if. But if Eduardo Rodriguez, it's a good young number four, and you're talking about Pomeranz or Wright as a number four, number five. I like this rotation. I don't think they're that far off. I think they're better than the Yankees, and I think this rotation stacks up with anybody in baseball.
Wow.
I know you're in Fort Myers, and hockey probably isn't on your mind, but, I mean, that win last night or yesterday afternoon against Calgary was pretty amazing. Tuukka Rask just out of his mind for the second half of that game in Marshall.
He was incredible. For them to be able to win like that in the shootout and do it right during the happy hours here in Florida, that's a pretty much perfect game for me.
I could not believe some of those saves in overtime, but you got to love the 3-on-3. But, I mean, back in Boston, though, is everybody kind of waiting for things to go off the cliff for this team, saying there's got to be a market correction here?
Well, I mean, what are they going to do with the trade deadline? That's where I'm waiting, yeah. And all due respect to the deal today that brings a stay-at-home defenseman in, I think you're waiting to see what they do and you know, are they all in for a run here? But I actually think fans in Boston are starting to warm up to this team, especially where the Celtics have sort of taken a step forward and a step back here over the last few weeks. I think fans are starting to say, wait a second now, these young kids keep doing it. And yesterday was such an important bounce back from that ugliness in Vancouver. For them to respond the way they did, I think speaks well of these guys going forward.
TC, we'll get you out of here on this because we were just having the discussion. Ryan Donato, Bruins prospect, is the name we've all gotten to know at the Olympics. What do you think he does? Do you think he leaves Harvard and goes right to the Bruins system after the Olympics? Does he wait till the end of the season? Does he play another year at Harvard? What do you think?
I don't think he plays another year, and I'm back and forth on what he does right after the Olympics here. Talking to people around the Beanpot the last few weeks, I got the feeling at one point that the thought was he was going to leave after the Olympics, and then the belief was he would come back and try to lead them. Harvard's had a disappointing year, by and large, though they've played better of late. And I personally think this showing in the Olympics is going to make it real easy for him to jump right into a playoff run for the Bruins.
Wow.
So I'm not sure where his head is at because, you know, he's out there, but, I mean, leading scorer on the Olympic team. He's been their brightest light. Why not take that and roll right into the Bruins? Maybe he becomes the guy who can give you a little offensive punch rather than going outside to trade.
All right, TC. Remember, sunblock 30. Sunblock 30. You know, that's
no curling talk?
Sweep.
Yeah, exactly. Have a good time down there, TC. We'll speak to you next week, buddy.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Tom Karen, everybody. Always love talking to TC down there in Florida. Of course, enjoying the great weather. All right, then we'll come back. We'll do Gone But Not Forgotten as we finish off hour number one right here in the Huddle on 101.3 ESPN.
It's Tuesday, which means it's time for Gone But Not Forgotten. Brought to you by Elmwood Meunier Funeral and Cremation Center in Burlington.
All right, Gone But Not Forgotten. Thanks to our friends over at Elmwood Meunier Funeral and Cremation in South Burlington. Available 24-7 around the clock. If in your time of need, call Elmwood Meunier. I have two of them, and I wanted to steal one that you brought up earlier, but you weren't going to use it, so I gotta give it justice. The guy from Bewitched, what's his name, Dick York?
Oh, Dick York, yeah.
Because there's two of them, Dick York and Dick Sargent,
right.
That played Darren, right?
Yes, and they both had very strange lives.
Yes, they did, absolutely.
Like
did.
The so, guy for Bob Crane from
Hogan's Heroes, who was murdered.
Yes.
Who was murdered. I mean, geez, the guy was, he was murdered anyway because he was a ladies' man. But anyway,
yes, he was, Dick, to put it mildly.
Yes, to put it mildly. Anyway, Dick York, right? Is that what you said?
That's right.
Passed away on this date. Was he the original?
I have no idea.
I don't know. I think he might have been the
original. The one with the bigger nose.
Is that who it is?
The original.
Matter of fact, they're very similar looking, too. I mean, if you put them side by side, they're very eerie.
Two Darrens.
Yeah, unbelievable. And the other one from our discussion yesterday, gone but not forgotten, long, long baseball games. They are gone now. They'll be cut shorter now. But thank goodness for that. Now I'll be real happy. I'll go back to baseball games when they become seven-inning games, like women's softball. So
well,
I go back.
Don't,
to,
you gone, might want to wait a little longer.
But not forgotten. Man, I'll wait another year.
Go to a high school game.
Yeah, wow. Exactly.
Or a minor league doubleheader.
Wow.
Go to a couple of Lake Monsters games on a Sunday
I
afternoon.
I love that. There's seven-inning games.
Seven-inning
games. That's what I'm talking about.
Well, that I like.
Yeah,
that
you
I like
that.
Because you're sitting there for 14 innings. That's
I'm
enough.
I'm sure you do.
Mike, gone but not forgotten, probably the single most influential person in this business I can think of in my lifetime, Kurt Gowdy, who died on this day at the age of 86 in 2006, growing up very young, listening to him calling the Sox games and doing all the stuff for NBC Sports.
Yes, sir.
It just seemed like he was all over my radio and all over my TV, and man, he was a serious influence.
My gone but not forgotten, the baseball budget at Yankee spring training, because Giancarlo Stanton and Aaron Judge took batting practice for the first time yesterday, and well, that was pretty fun to watch, and they're going to need some more baseballs than usual down in Tampa.
They have people standing in the parking lot of Raymond James Stadium across the freeway, because it's literally right across the street.
Yeah, from Steinbrenner Stadium.
I mean, you got to hit the ball 500 feet, but they might.
I mean, I would love to see those guys in spring training. Oh. To see them up close.
Batting practice? How great would that
not
be?
I'm just taking hacks in a spring training game, but someone like Judge, I'm just curious. I don't know. In spring training, will he play like three innings in like half the games, and that's pretty much it? Or he won't even do that much? Is that too much to think, or what?
No, I would think that he'll
play more than that or less than
that. I think he's an everyday outfielder for the Yankees. I think he'll get it. I think he'll have the same progression rate as general everyday position players.
I thought they keep him out and stuff like that, and they hold everybody back. And
not really. No. It depends. Depends on when. And a guy like him, where timing and being ready for the season
is
so important.
Well, his swings, though. I could see him. They do like DHs, obviously. So I could see him DHing four at-bats, but not being on the field.
50 to 60 at-bats, I think, is a general spring number.
Basically what happens is starters start, and then you see them all head out to the clubhouse.
Well, then you see number 88 playing, and you have no idea who number 88 is.
All the autograph get-a-lifers go out there by the bullpen and wait for them at the end of the fifth inning.
I'm just waiting for number 100 to play out there. We're going to give you number 100. Did you, real quick, did you see the backup that the Rangers gave their emergency goalie? They had to use their emergency goalie. It's some kid that sits in the stands. They gave him number 69, and they put McBackup on I thought that was awesome. Hour one in the books. Brady's going to have a Sports Center update. Brady, what are we going to get to after that? Yeah.
Stephen A. Smith, he says people should avoid the Patriots this offseason if they're free agents.
All right. So thanks to our friends over at Elmwood Meunier Cremation and Funeral are with you for 24-7. Make sure you give them the call. Brady, well, that Sports Center update next right here on 101.3 ESPN.
Sports and sports talk for the Champlain Valley. WCPB, Essex, Burlington, Plattsburgh, 101.3 ESPN.
The Red Sox officially have J.D. Martinez. It's a 5-year deal, which we knew. What we didn't know yesterday at the time of the signing is that there's also a secondary opt-out option for Martinez. He can opt out after 2 years, which we knew, or 3 years, which we didn't. So $110 million in 5 years is the, well, that's the highest that the contract can go. Should the Patriots have a hard time attracting free agents this offseason? Well, Stephen A. Smith thinks that free agents should avoid New England altogether. He said that yesterday on First Take. We're going to get into those comments next year to kick off Hour 2 of the Huddle. To make room for J.D. Martinez, the Red Sox have traded slugging outfielder Bryce Brents, who led the minors with 31 home runs last season. They send him to Pittsburgh for cash considerations. It makes room for J.D. Martinez on the 40-man roster. Bruins prospect Ryan Donato had 2 goals for Team USA yesterday as they advanced to the quarterfinal round of the Olympics. Will Donato head pro after the Olympics? Tom Karen of Nesson just joined us minutes ago and said he's unsure, thinks it's 50-50 whether Donato comes now or comes after the conclusion of his Harvard Crimson College season. The Huddle, Hour 2 next, 101.3 ESPN, 101.3ESPN.com. We're always streaming, so take us anywhere on the 101.3 ESPN app.
Studies show that listening to 101.3 ESPN makes you more productive, and we'll prove it when we get around to it. This is The Huddle on 101.3 ESPN.
All right, good afternoon, everybody. You're in The Huddle right here at 101.3 ESPN. We're all on the count of four. Brady's here, Rich is here, I am here, and I told my wife, what are you, Brady? I didn't mean to insult her, but I go, what are you doing?
Wow.
I said, what are you, Brady? She was writing out the trivia questions for tomorrow for trivia night at the City Sports Grill. I go, dumb it down. Stop making it so hard. Dumb it down. Brady makes it impossible to win Power Play. Dumb it down for the audience. They were complaining last week it was too hard.
I would say that that was only a one-week deal when it came to making it hard. That was those presidents were really tough on Friday. Plus, it didn't help that we couldn't get any phone calls because we couldn't figure out how to push all the right buttons. But
I think we have to do it at the trivia night, I think if you can get like 4 out of the 8 is a good number, right? You can't get all of them right.
Yeah,
you're not that smart, people.
Generally,
you're not
that table in the front that always seems to win gets what, about 5 every round?
They get
maybe
about
6?
No, not even that much now. Yeah. We made it a little bit harder. They got 3 in 1 round. So,
all right, well, I want to see a big crowd there tomorrow. I'm going to be emceeing.
Yeah, you're hosting.
It. Yep.
So that's going to be a lot of fun. Brady, where are we going to be on Friday?
We're going to be at a Goodwater Brewery in Williston. Really, really fun spot. They've got some great beer. 9 different kinds, actually. 4 of which you can take home in cans.
Oh, look
right
at
on
that.
Marshall Avenue.
Yeah. Hey, real quick, because I know you have a lot of Patriot stuff to get to. I brought this up on Sunday. I said, I will bet you dollars to donuts. Cushing is going to be a member of the Patriots because what's his face is cutting him?
Bill O'Brien and the Texans.
I said, dollars to donuts.
He'll be
a Patriot. And today I'm also going to say Doug Martin's going to be a Patriot. So
possible.
But very possible. I was going to say more possible on Martin than Cushing, but I may take that back.
What do they do with Martin? I mean,
he's a running back.
Thank you.
Yeah, you hand it to him and he runs.
And because because like I said,
because they only have 7 of those.
And I said you have 7 of them, you don't have one. And guess what? You're going to be without a few next year too, because you need to go and start clearing some room. So you need to clear out the 5th, 6th, 7th, 8th, and 9th running backs to go ahead and cut down on that salary.
Martin, how about getting a pass rusher? There's a neat concept.
Well, what did you think about the Cushing thing? You like that one or no?
I think when he's not suspended
injured,
then
he's
great.
That's what it comes with there.
He has been
that's what
trouble,
it comes
hasn't
with,
he?
Brady. All right, what are we going to do now? What's going on?
Well, you talk about free agents the Patriots might get. Well, according to Stephen A. Smith of ESPN, the Patriots shouldn't get any of them.
Wow. I have never spoken against Bill Belichick until this Malcolm Butler situation happened. I think it was an exercise in cruelty. I think every free agent should think twice about going to play for the New England Patriots and going to play for this man. I understand it is a business, but it is a game as well. And you work your tail off and you do everything you can to position yourself for the moment, which is a Super Bowl. Don't tell me he knew all along. And maybe McCourty is right about this. Maybe they knew he wasn't going to start, but no one knew that he would not play one single defensive snap.
So he's so mad about the Malcolm Butler thing. He says that basically Bill Belichick, the Patriots are untrustworthy and a bit sleazy, and free agents should not come to Foxborough.
I could see how he comes to all those conclusions, but I see other teams doing the same thing also. They're looking you in the face, oh, you're our guy, and then drafting somebody to back you up. I mean, that happens all the time. It is a business. I am concerned, though. I'm still not any closer to the truth as to, I really believe that maybe something was said in the week, but why was he crying then? It came to like, it was a surprise to him. I don't know if I'm getting the full truth. I kind of like what Stephen A. said. He knew he wasn't going, everybody kind of knew he wasn't going to start, but nobody knew that he wasn't going to play. I think that's the best definition I've heard so far.
I completely agree with Stephen A. Smith on that. And as a Pats fan, I hate it. I'm still furious at Belichick, and it's the first time I've ever been furious at him because all he does is win, and Bill, we trust, blah, blah, blah. Everything he does, half the things he does makes no sense to me, but he keeps winning. But this one put me right over the cliff as far as how I feel about Belichick, and I suspect a lot of players are going to feel that way too. You've got to balance. Do you want to be on a team that has an absolute legitimate shot at going to the Super Bowl with that sort of situation in the air above Foxborough? Do you want that?
I like what you said there about it being a balance between what the player wants to win and what is an actual situation. But see, the Malcolm Butler thing doesn't weigh on my decision at all if I'm a free agent. What weighs on my decision is organizational stability. What's the long-term projections? Am I signing a one-year deal? Am I signing a four-year deal? Because I don't know who the quarterback's going to be next year. I don't know how long Belichick's waiting around. And you know what? I think that McDaniels is more sleazy than Belichick is based on what he just did to Indianapolis.
Why is it okay to go there as a free agent, but when we talked about Cora taking over for the Red Sox, oh, this is great. He's a player's guy. He's a player's manager. He's going to, I didn't say you said this, but he's going to not coddle you, but he's going to talk to you. He's going to, you know, it's not going to be yelling and, you know, screaming. Remember, I brought that up yesterday. We said that, you know, people don't respond to that very, very well anymore. You know, why? Why is that okay, you know, that they have a new player-friendly manager, but when it comes to Belichick, he's not player-friendly. We know that, huh?
Well, I think football, it's more generally accepted now. You know, I think it's still, if you could get away with being old school, it's football.
I can agree with that.
Belichick came in with that attitude at a time when it was more okay, and he's won so much that he can still get away with it. You're not coming in here with no track record and acting like Belichick does.
And the thing is, if you're a free agent and you're deciding whether to go to one team or another, one of them being the Patriots, you know exactly what you're getting
into.
But absolutely. That's where the Butler thing kind of ticked me off, is because that just came out of left field. I mean, it wasn't, you know, what was that? Where did that come from? Why did that happen?
And why would you want this continuing over till next year? Wouldn't you want to put an end to it, wrap it up? You lost the Super Bowl. Put this end to it. You don't need this BS all during the offseason.
No, I understand. But like I said, you got to balance it out. What's more important to you? If you've played 12 years in the league for the Bengals or whatever, wouldn't you want a crack at the Super Bowl?
Yeah, but I still think it's about more than the Malcolm. You know, I think we're making too much of the Malcolm Butler situation's impact to incoming potential free agents. I can understand guys on the current team being resentful, guys who are free agents that are Patriots maybe not wanting to resign because they feel like that Belichick screwed them out of a chance to win the Super Bowl. But for players that would be coming in here that haven't been Patriots, I'd be more scared off by who's going to be my quarterback next year, how long is Belichick going to be around. If he leaves, is McDaniels the guy coming in? But I think he's kind of sleazy. I think those are the questions that would scare me off more as an incoming free agent, more so than, hey, what happened with this group last year and Malcolm Butler?
You've said a couple times you'd be nervous about who your quarterback is. Isn't it definitely Tom Brady?
Well, if we're talking about a guy who's 41 years old, I don't know that he's going to be around at 42. And at 40, do I want to sign a four-year guaranteed deal?
That's different.
Knowing that I could be going into mediocrity the moment that Brady leaves.
Right. Now, okay.
If I'm a veteran championship chaser in the way that Chris Long was, maybe it doesn't matter to me because, you know, I can come here. I think Brady's around for 1 year. I can try to win my championship and
that's
be on my way.
Yep.
But if I'm a guy who's going to try, you know, like they're going to want to re-sign Brandon Cooks, I would imagine. Does Brandon Cooks want to sign a four-year deal here knowing that, hey, am I going to get to play for Belichick? Am I going to get to play with Brady? Or are things going to go off the cliff here and I'm going to be the best wide receiver on a team with a quarterback that we've drafted and are now trying to develop? I think that's more of the question than Malcolm Butler.
Really? Because I'd look at that if I'm Cooks and I'd say, what if he benches me for the Super Bowl? It just lent a little air of instability to everything in the most stable franchise in sports.
You know, why is it, you know, the days of it's my way or the highway, those days are over. You know, Belichick, that's the wrong way of thinking. I don't care how great of a coach you are. Even if you're the best doctor in the world, you're the best pilot in the world, you still take criticism from your other pilots, from your other doctors, right? If you're the best firefighter in the world, your other firefighters say, hey, what you did there was a little dangerous. You put your damn life on the line. This is the way you do it next time if you're a rookie or something like that. You listen to it. Just because you think you're the best doesn't mean you know all the damn answers. And he doesn't want to hear anybody else's answer. You know what? He doesn't even want to really hear about Tom Brady.
Right.
That's what bothers me.
And what Brady said was important. If you've got a guy who's 25 and looking for a long-term big-time deal, does he go to New England under that the situation with Brady and the sort of weirdness of Bill Belichick and having no idea what he's going to pull next for a 4 or 5 year deal? Probably not. But you're right. The guy who wants that 1 year, wants that Super Bowl crack one more time is the guy that will go.
Yeah, I don't think that. So ultimately with Stephen A., I disagree in saying that you should avoid New England because of the Malcolm Butler thing. I think you should avoid New England if you're inclined to because of the unstable future and the unpredictability of the future, because you don't know what's coming.
By the way, just on a little side note about who's coming and who's not coming, I'm hearing more and more and more, and nothing's confirmed or anything, that Gronk is going to retire, that he's not going to come back this year.
That would be very bad.
And matter of fact, I don't think his contract was as friendly as I thought it was for the upcoming year for the Patriots. For what I understand, if he comes back this year, it's a 2-year guarantee, is it not? So then the Patriots have to go ahead and guarantee 2 years of salary, and I don't think they want to do that. I don't think he's coming back. I think he's calling it quits. I could be wrong on the contract, but double-check that, Brady. Because, from what I understand, if he comes back this year, they're in the hook for him for 2 years, but I don't know how
well,
that's
he's
possible.
Under contract for 2018 and for 2019,
so
but that's not – I mean – yeah, but he'd just be walking away from his contract.
Right, but they say that if the Patriots took him back this year, they also have to pay him for the year after that. I don't know how that's possible. I'm not the contract expert. I just don't think he's coming back. Well, I think the rumors are true. I think he's going to walk away from everything.
I'm still looking at that. Well, the fact that he hasn't come back out and said, you know what, I got caught up in the heat of the moment,
right,
is a little bit disconcerting. But the fact that it's Arnie, who's never once been right about any speculation
regarding
the New England Patriots, I'm going to take it with a grain of salt.
Well, I mean, I think it's more than 50-50.
I think it's gone up a little bit the last couple of weeks. I will give you that. I thought by the 1 week out of the Super Bowl, he was going to say, I was
frustrated. I don't think he wants to continue with the physical problems that he's having.
Let's hope you're wrong.
I think it's probably a lot worse than we even imagine with the concussions and the hits like
that. And people forget, at Arizona, he had all kinds of back issues.
He missed his junior year because he was lifting weights and ripped his back apart.
Yeah, that's dropped his draft status. That's the one reason why the Pats got him.
If Gronk retires before June 1st, the Patriots will owe him $4 million. They will save $6.9 million if he retires before June 1st. If he retires after June 1st, they will pay him $2 million. And they will save $9 million. So if he's going to retire, they actually
have to wait till after June 1st.
He will do them a favor financially while retiring after June 1st.
So then if he was going to come back, wouldn't he have said something now? Is he waiting after June 1st to say something? If he was going to come back, he goes, hey, I'm coming back. Let's get going. Instead of waiting closer to June 1st, or am I reading too much into that?
I don't know. His cap number is almost $11 million. So that's where these numbers come from. So if he retires before June 1st, he gets $4 million. They save $7 million. That gets you to the to the total of $11 million. If he after June 1st, it's $2 million and $9 million, which gets you to $11 million.
Does he want to take $2 million less if he's going to retire?
I mean, I'm saying he would be doing the Patriots a favor.
I don't think I want to give you that much of a favor. So. I don't think I'm that nice of a guy to leave $2 million on the table.
I suspect he spent the last 3 weeks on an island and really hasn't talked much about it.
I suspect that his handlers are going over that very carefully with him right now, saying, this is what you get if you say it now, and this is what you get if you say it later. Now or later, $2 million on the line here, what would you do?
Well, I'll tell you what, if he's waffling, I guarantee you there's all kinds of his friends from the Patriots talking it over with him.
Well,
guarantee it.
Some money on the line there, no doubt about that. All right, a little bit more on Martinez, Brady. What's going on there?
Yeah, I thought this was interesting. I was all ready to say, I think the signing of Martinez has the biggest on-field impact on Xander Bogaerts, because Bogaerts, I assumed, was going to hit third, and, well, if you've got J.D. Martinez hitting behind you, that means you're going to get a lot more fastballs, a lot more pitches to hit. And for a guy who struggled last year offensively, that's the best situation you could have. But TC tells us Henry Ramirez is going to hit third and Bogarts is going to hit seventh.
Give me the batting order in just based on what TC's, because I'm already confused. Because I thought Nunez was going to bat second until he said he was going to bat eighth. So
Betts is going to lead off. Yeah. Okay. That's guaranteed.
Benintendi's
going to hit second. That's guaranteed. Now, this is what we don't know. Now we don't know anything else from this point. I got to imagine Bradley hits ninth.
Right.
I think Vasquez, we know that.
Probably hit eighth.
Why am I wrong to say I don't think Benintendi should be at bat second? Is that
because he's not good enough?
No. I like two setup guys. Right. I want the fast guy first. I want the contact hitter second, and then I want the 300 hitters 3, 4, 5, 6. Give me the meat of that. I don't want my 300 hitter batting second, even though he gets more at bats. I understand
that. Well, Benintendi at 270 last year.
Well,
I
think he's going to be better
than
that.
But he got on base a lot, and he does have speed. I think he's a two guy right now. Well, just like I thought Betts was a one guy until he hit 31 home runs, and they had to move him 2 years ago.
The thing about the Red Sox is that they are very, very right-handed dominant, which is what TC went out and said. I mean, you look at this lineup and you look at all the righties that they've got. Martinez is a righty. Nunez is a righty. Pedroia, when he plays, is a righty. Betts is a righty. Hanley is a righty. Vasquez is a righty. There's a lot of right-handers in this lineup, so you've got to be able to split up your order in some way.
I was going to say, though, Jeff, to split them up somewhere between 3, 4, and 5. You got to put them somewhere there.
So that the only thing, what I was thinking was that you were going to get Betts, Benintendi, and then you were going to see Bogarts 3, Martinez 4, Devers 5, and Hanley 6 when he plays. That's what I was thinking.
I think Bogarts, I couldn't agree with you more. I think he goes to the 3 slot. He'll stop seeing a curveball. Curveballs just drove him nuts last year because I really believe he was hurt almost all season.
He's seen more curveballs every year of his career.
Yes, and when he wasn't seeing as many, he was hitting 300. In fact, for a long time, 2 years ago, he was leading the league in hitting. He was hitting about 340 at the All-Star break a couple of years ago. And it went downhill from there. I'd love to see him in the 3 slot. If he starts seeing pitches, that's going to create a big problem for 1, 2, 3, and 4.
What did I send you? Was there an article that I sent you about now that they signed Martinez that they were going to trade or not trade? Was it Jackie Bradley?
They were not going to trade Jackie Bradley Jr., and they shouldn't trade
Jackie.
I didn't
know that was an option. Why was that? Why? Because I'm like, yes. Oh, yeah. Let's do that. Let's do that. Yes, right now.
You want to trade?
Yes.
Bradley. Why?
Because I'm going to get a lot for him. Am I not? Am I going to go ahead and clear up some space and get a lot for him?
Bradley's A, not making a lot of money, and B, you're going to get prospects. And as much as I love prospects, you're not going
to
get.
Well, you have to restock.
You're not going to get real proven prospects because he's only got like 2 years left on his deal.
Why was that an option, though, that I didn't? Because I didn't know that one
because
was a correlation with the other.
What you would do is you would put Martinez in the outfield instead of at DH. So you would put Martinez in the outfield with Benintendi and Betts. Bradley would be gone. And that would free up your DH logjam and allow Ramirez and Nunez to play a little easier.
That's not so bad. That's not so bad
if
at
you
all.
Think,
but,
well,
but you're telling me if I'm getting a bargain with Jack, how much is he making a year?
Not much.
Well, 2 years he's going to make a lot.
Well, I guess I'd rather try. I mean, if you're all about win now, then Bradley gives you the best chance at winning now. You'd be sacrificing defense. You'd lose Bradley's defense, and you put Martinez out there. And then you'd be playing Hanley and Nunez, and we don't know that they're great offensive pieces over 162 right now.
There's no doubt in my mind he's not going to be on the team in 2 years. He's just not going to be able to afford him, and especially he doesn't have enough punch
to command a huge contract when he's out there hitting 240 every year with no power?
He doesn't consider himself a 240 hitter.
Well,
sure,
guess what? Yeah. I mean, has he looked at his numbers?
He's got 3 years on his three years left this year. And two more.
So you're probably going to hold on to him. How attractive is somebody like that? 3 years left, low pay, and the upside is through the roof.
He's making $6 million.
Yeah, that's like minimum wage. That's like chump change.
Go figure.
That's unbelievable.
No, but look, if an offer comes along that you can't refuse, I'd absolutely pull the trigger on that. Especially when you can put Martinez. You lose a lot defensively by putting Martinez in there instead of Bradley. But
give me
you
10
know what?
Minor leaguers.
It totally depends. Well, if they want to restock the minors and they get a couple of blue chippers, they might pull the trigger.
Brady, who is coming up next?
Ed O'Bannon. What a story.
Ed O'Bannon.
What a story this is. A former NBA player, ninth pick in the NBA draft. He won a national championship at UCLA. and 14 years later sued the NCAA.
Yes, what is that
all about?
We'll get to that story next right here on 101.3 ESPN.
The local sports talk show. Nothing else comes close. Come to think of it, there isn't anything else. The Huddle, 101.3 ESPN.
Let's go!
Welcome back here in the Huddle right here on 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com. I want to get right down to the TikTok Jewelers guest line because there's an incredible story to be told. We're talking with Ed O'Bannon, who's a former NBA player and NCAA champion, won a national basketball championship with UCLA back in 1995, won numerous Player of the Year awards, but also sued the NCAA in 2009 for profiting off his likeness. He's the author of the new book, Court Justice, Inside My Story of My Battle Against the NCAA. Ed, thanks for being with us. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you.
I appreciate you coming on to tell your story. And I asked this kind of tongue-in-cheek. Tell me the story where you noticed about yourself. You noticed yourself in that video game. I think it was NCAA March Madness 09, which, by the way, was one of my favorite games all time.
Well, you know what? I was at a friend's house, just real quick, at a friend's house, saw my avatar on the video game, and I initially was fired up about it. I loved that I was on there. It was almost like watching, game film.
Yeah.
And then he said that he paid $60 and I didn't get a dime. And we joked about it, but it eventually got serious, obviously.
So take me through the decision to actually go. Look, it's one thing to be frustrated. It's another thing to go formally into court against the NCAA. Take me through kind of the evolution of your thoughts to eventually getting to that point.
Yes. So after recognizing and seeing the avatar, I chalked it up as, just the system. That's just how things have always been for a college athlete, current and former. And so 2 weeks later, I get a call from Sonny Vaccaro, who wanted to let me know about his plans in suing the NCAA. I say, hey, Mr. Vaccaro, ironically, a couple weeks ago, I saw my face on this video game. And then wheels started turning. He initially wanted me to be the plaintiff, in that lawsuit that he was talking about. And once I threw my two cents in, he thought that I would be the perfect, person for it. I talked it over with my wife for a couple of nights, and then, we eventually decided to do it.
Now, you won the lawsuit, but you still didn't profit from it. As far as I understand, that's the reason why the NCAA video game series no longer exists, and there's been some modifications to how teams market jerseys with player numbers, et cetera. Am I correct on that?
Somewhat. Yes, I did not get a dime from this lawsuit. EA Sports decided not to or continue making the video game for whatever reason. You'll have to ask them.
Okay.
But our biggest thing was to shed light on the fact that they were going against the law here, using players' likeness for profit without compensating the actual, the actual athletes. So, but you'd have to ask them why they discontinued.
Now, I was watching the 30 for 30 the other day on the Fab Five, the Michigan team that preceded you by a couple of years at UCLA, and some of this exploitation and profitability on these young players was going on then. How far back does this really extend?
That's a great question. Probably as far back as they started making jerseys and selling them in bookstores.
Hmm.
I think, I know we talked about it back when I was in school, during those Fab 5 days, we in fact played against them. So we talked about it, not all the time, but it was something that we noticed. But again, we knew that there was nothing we could do about it, but I think it goes back, at least, then probably even further when they started televising games, and I'm sure they made a profit at some point.
We're talking with Ed O'Bannon, former NBA player, NCAA champion, sued the NCAA in 2009 and is the co-author of the new book, Court Justice, Inside Story of My Battle Against the NCAA. Just came out a week ago. It's a fabulous read. I recommend it highly. Were you resentful of the NCAA while you were a part of it? You said you noticed this stuff going on, but were you resentful?
Resentful? I don't think I was. At that time recognized that the system was wrong and was broken. Was I resentful? No, I don't think so. That wasn't my train of thought at that time. It was as a young adult. It was all about doing the best that I could to help my team win a national championship and work as hard as I could in the classroom. Those were my thoughts, but it was something that I did notice. Absolutely. Resentful? I don't think I was resentful, but I did recognize.
When you look back on college, how do you view your college experience? Do you look back at it and say, I was proud to be an NCAA athlete, or do you look back at it and say, you know what, it wasn't the best of times?
No, it was the greatest of times. I met my wife in college. I started a family in college. I have lifelong friends. I talk to my roommate, Sean Tarver, every week. I loved my time. The campus was beautiful. We won a national championship. I played with my brother, played in front of my parents, every night. I absolutely loved my college experience. I just feel like, athletes now, and even then, have to be a little bit more aware of what their rights are. And since they are bringing in billions of dollars, a scholarship just isn't enough. They deserve at least a small portion of the billions of dollars that they're bringing in. So, it's really kind of that simple.
So how would you go about compensating players? And I know this is a complicated issue, but is it a percentage of what the program brings in? Is it, hey, this guy's going to get a little bit more because he plays more? Where does the conversation start?
I'm not sure where the conversation started. What I do believe is everyone, men's and women's, all sports, should have equal pay. I think there's enough money, again, billions of dollars, that everyone should be compensated, or everyone should get a check. If you don't write a check, at least take the ceiling off of the athletes that can make money. If an endorsement deal pops up because someone can shoot a jump shot, then they should be able to profit off of that. It is their likeness. It's their jump shot. A company wants to endorse that person's talents and their likeness. They should be able to do it in any other walk of life that is available to them. I don't understand why it's not available to the student athlete.
Ed, you kind of hinted on this a couple of minutes ago, but I'll ask you in full here. How do you respond to the critics that say, well, hey, college kids have it pretty good. Top-notch dorms, top-notch meals, top-notch travel, see all these cool places and forge all these relationships. How do you respond to those people?
Well, if I bring in billions of dollars, if athletes bring in billions of dollars, then they deserve a share of that money. That's my belief. It's quite simple, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
It's the American way. At least I should be able to control my likeness. It is my face. I should be able to control it.
Ed, we'll get you out of here. Ed, we'll get you out of here on this. As I said, I kind of joked about it at the beginning, but all of the NCAA franchise video games were my favorite. So I was sad to see them go, but you know, your perspective has shed a new light on it. So I'll ask you this. If they were to make those video games again, how does it work? Does it, you know, you get royalties like an actor does every time his movie reruns? Is it that simple?
It can be. I don't think life really should be all that hard. If your likeness is sold, royalties would be great. Look, there's people in that industry that are a lot smarter than I am that can figure this out. But yeah, I think that whenever your likeness is used for profit, I believe that you should be able to, you should be compensated for it. For me, that is really kind of all that simple.
Ed O'Bannon, former NBA player, NCAA champion, won a national title with UCLA in 95. The book is Court Justice, Inside My Story of My Battle Against the NCAA. It just came out, and look, we really recommend it. Ed, we appreciate the time, the honesty, perspective, and we'd love to have you on again sometime.
Sounds great. Thank you for having me on.
Very interesting. This has been going on, like you said, a long, long time. About whether they should get paid. You know, the correct me if I'm wrong, you guys, Brady, you're more of a gamer than I am. Didn't they stop the college basketball, right?
They stopped all of them.
Yeah, okay, because they didn't want to pay them. But they also, the NFL players get a contract.
It's part of the NFLPA, right. And you can opt out of being in the video games somehow. Like Barry Bonds for a while did not appear in video games.
Okay, I didn't know that.
He was literally, so you would go to... you would play, I remember it was the MVP video games, and Barry Bonds would not be in it. Wow. And he would be listed as John Dowd.
Okay.
And he was number 20. He was not number 25.
Right.
He was white. He was tall and skinny. Like, he was just everything opposite of Bonds, but he would still be, like, they would be the player, but it would not, it would be as further away from the likeness as possible.
Wow, this Dowd guy can really hit.
By the way, it's not only happened to Ed, right? It has happened to other athletes before, way before he even came around. Am I correct on that?
Yeah, as I mentioned, remember, did you see the 30 for 30 on the Fab Five? It's old.
I did not see that.
Oh, it's arguably the best one.
Other than the fact that Chris Webber refused to talk.
Well, yeah, it was arguably the best one, though. But they were talking about then how Jalen Rose and the Fab Five, that's why they went to the all-black socks, because they just wanted something that had no logo on it, no branding. They didn't want to say, oh, the Fab Five wears Nikes or whatever. So they just, that's why they did that stuff, so that it couldn't be that people, brands weren't making money off them representing.
We know the rumors. The NBA won't admit it. Jerry West is the logo, correct?
Yes,
do you know who the rumor was for the Major League Baseball guy for many, many years?
Oh, yes, I did know that.
I think I know.
It's nobody. We've done this before.
Really? That's a pretty generic batting stance.
I thought he was a Hall of Famer.
No,
I was going to say Harmon Killebrew.
Yeah, it's not.
It's not Harmon Killebrew?
I don't know.
That's who I thought it was. I think he's a Hall of Famer.
He definitely is.
I'm not sure. But I don't think Jerry West gets paid for being the logo. He insists that he is. The NBA, I don't think, has ever admitted it, because then they would have to pay him a gazillion dollars.
He's doing pretty well for himself without that.
Let me tell you, he was old school NBA. There wasn't a lot of money back then.
Right, but he's been running basketball teams ever since.
How much you think comes with being the logo of the NBA?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
No, I understand.
Paul Lucas, who runs UniWatch, which is like ESPN's uniform section, we have him on a bunch.
Uh-huh.
He says it's a very, very popular rumor that it's Killebrew. But the guy who started this, who developed the logo, is a guy named Jerry Dior, and he says that it is not any specific person. It's a variation based on magazine photographs.
So I thought it was. See, I always get those stupid rumors mixed up. I thought it was Killebrew.
Look like Killebrew now that I look
does
at it.
It
with
does
a
it?
Big pointy nose.
I don't know.
Wasn't Killebrew a left-handed hitter?
That I don't know. But the logo's really Jerry West, or is that a rumor too?
The logo is Jerry West.
But never admitted by the NBA. They can't admit that, right?
I don't know. I
don't think they ever admitted that, but then they would have to pay him a gazillion dollars. And they don't want to pay him a gazillion dollars. They'd rather keep the money themselves. Brady, what's coming up next?
We'll get real quick. The Yankees, how good could their lineup be? And the Red Sox make a trade.
All right, next, right here on 101.3 ESPN.
Rich, how do you deal with this guy? It's The Huddle with Rich and Arnie on 101.3 ESPN.
All right, show just flying by. Welcome back. You're in the huddle right here, 101.3 ESPN. The Red Sox make a small trade, I guess. Nothing earth-shattering, Brady?
No, nothing crazy. They trade Bryce Brentz, who's a kind of a 4A outfielder, a guy who was battling to be on that, battling to be the fourth outfielder for the team. But look, he did lead the International League in home runs last year with 31, hit 271. He is 29 years old. Ultimately, is it a big loss? No, but what it does is it continues to just suck away at any depth you had in the minor leagues.
It was weird because you see those numbers. I saw one Pawtucket game last summer, and he hit two home runs, went 4 for 5, and drove in 5 runs. I mean, I'm thinking to myself, wow, why isn't this guy at Fenway? But you're right. There's a lot of guys, you know, down at that level that put up good numbers but just can't for whatever reason, whether it's speed or locker room presence, can't seem to get over the hump.
Wow. So you mean we're taking the experienced major leaguer over these potential guys and throwing them to the wow, what a concept, Brady, huh? What a concept.
Look,
huh?
I have no problem with trading Bryce Brent. So all it just means is that continue to hope that everybody stays healthy because you don't have a lot of other options internally to fill things. Ruzny Castillo is your only real option down at AAA, and Brock Holt and Eduardo Nunez currently serve as your back. Look, I'm not knocking it because this is not a prospect. This is not a prospect in the way I usually value prospects. This is a 29-year-old who's out of options. So does it matter? No. But all it does is it continues to just kind of needle away at your depth.
By the way, the AAA team just going to be lousy? I mean, like be 0-110 or something like that?
Pawtucket?
I mean, yeah, is it just going to be miserable because they have no prospects?
Yeah, there's not much there. Pawtucket tends to be a team filled with Bryce Brentses. Most of the lineup is 27, 28-year-old journeymen in their last stop.
So that would make them great, not horrible. That would make them good.
You'd be surprised.
The way you guys talk, they're not going to win a game this year.
I think the key in the minors for the major league club is what's happening at AA. That's where you have your blue chippers, the 22-year-olds.
Well, they'll go ahead and they traded him. They didn't get a lot in return, obviously.
They got money.
Well, money's important, I guess. Yeah.
Especially after they just spent $110 million yesterday.
they got money, so there you go. What did you want to say about Stanton and Judge? Because I know we talked a little bit about this earlier. People are just flocking to see these guys. spring training, I'm sure, batting practice, whatever they can get a hold of this guy.
Look, I hate the Yankees, but I am enthralled by just how their lineup could look this season. With what they have. And you know what's funny? And call me weird. I might have a screw loose.
Weird.
The guy I'm most excited to watch in all of this lineup is Didi Gregorius. He is the guy I am most excited to see with the Yankees. He's left-handed in a lineup full of righties. Judge is a righty. Sanchez is a righty. Stanton is a righty. So it's a lineup full of righties. Gregorius is the one lefty you plop down in the middle there. We're talking about a shortstop that could go for 30 home runs. A shortstop that looks like he's 165 pounds who could go for 30 home runs. I just enjoy watching Didi play.
I'll tell you what, and I know you hate this, but every Yankee in that starting lineup is going to be off the board by the third round of the fantasy drafts. Sure. I mean, that starting lineup is – even the guys down at the bottom of the order are going to do some damage because they're just not going to pitch to so many people. But I don't know. Time to worry. Judge went 21 pitches before he hit one out in Tampa today.
Hey, by the way, did Didi have the did he come in with high expectations, or was he like a shot out of nowhere?
No, he was a glove-first infielder who was supposed to be able to just slap the ball around the field. He was essentially, in my mind, when he first came around, he was D. Gordon in my mind.
It's just amazing how somebody, not that you're wrong about somebody like this, but that people can't see the potential, and now he's like phenomenal. Yeah. I mean, we're not talking about a guy that just went from average to good. We're talking about average to phenomenal, and people can't see this. That's
I mean, he drove in almost 90 runs, missed almost 30 games last year.
Just, and by the way, you don't even dare. Is it like splitting tens if I tell you, do you dare stick him in between Judge and
Stanton?
Stanton?
Yes.
It's like splitting tens.
No, it's not. I would actually say
it's the right thing to do, but you can't do it.
If you were going to put Judge second, which is what they're thinking about doing.
If
you were going to put Judge two,
last year.
If you were going to put Judge two, then Gregorius three, Stanton four, then yes, I could say you're going to do it. If you were going to put Stanton and Judge 3-4, then
is it a waste to put him 3-4-5? Judge, Gregorius?
I would not put one of the righties fifth. I think that's too far down. If Judge is going to hit second, then I bet Didi hits third. Well, I think there's a chance Didi could hit third.
No, I don't. I think this is a possibility of them splitting that up. I mean,
I've never heard a home run hitter batting second like that.
Well, it's just that Gregoria, I mean, look at that guy's numbers. All he's done is improved every year since he came over from the Diamondbacks to the point where he's getting close to a 3,100 kind of season. His batting average has gone up. He gets on base all the time.
Yeah, why would you put Didi second then?
You would think, but they put Judge at too low. Why did they have Judge batting second?
I don't know.
He walked so much?
Well, he walked a lot. They want to get guys more at-bats. The Cubs are talking about hitting Chris Bryant first. Yeah. I mean, and if you want to play the righty-lefty game, you got Gardner,
well,
who's going to lead off. Then Judge hits second, so that gives them lefty-righty. Then Didi hits third, lefty-righty-lefty, and then Stanton hits fourth. Yeah. And now you've gone back and forth through the first four, and then you probably get Sanchez in their fifth,
but you're not
and Greg Bird's
table,
in their
though.
Sixth.
You're waste. I mean, what's more important?
Who needs to set the table when Judge just hits a two-run homer anyways?
Yeah, I mean, what's more important, getting Judge up an extra at bat because he's batting second, or getting him up with his runners on first and second and nobody out or something like that?
Brett Gardner might score 130 runs this year.
Jeez, I thought they were going to try to break Hack Wilson's RBI record. What was it, like 180-something?
That is a formidable lineup, no question about it.
All right, last story standing coming up. We got a couple of them, right? One on the Patriots and one because you gave me the one on the Patriots, did you not? And Brady, you have one. So
I got one on a debate that we've had every time we do the show.
All right, we'll get to that next right here on 101.3 ESPN.
Time for one last piece of news gone untouched throughout the show. Wacky or insightful? It's time for Last Story Standing on the Huddle on 101.3 ESPN.
All right, we'll see if we can get an answer to that much big debate that we have every time we talk about the Red Sox. Brady, what is Last Story Standing?
So every day that we do this, we always say, well, J.D. Martinez, well, he'll be a great Red Sox. And you say that all the time.
I say that.
And I say that too. And Rich goes, you guys are morons. It's Red Sox in all occasions.
Yes, plural.
And we say, how in the hell am I going to say J.D. Martinez is a great Red Sox?
I agree that it sounds strange, but whoever it was back in 1910 or whatever, 1900, that came up with putting an X at the end of it, blame the Chicago White Sox guy, too.
So our buddy from the Red Sox, Gordon Eads, has actually written on this topic, and he consulted a linguist about it, and it is actually Red Sox, but most people will manipulate the sentence so that it makes sense. Like, instead of saying J.D. Martinez is a Red Sox, they will now say J.D. Martinez is a member of the Red Sox. So it is Red Sox with the X, but most people will manipulate the sentence so that it actually works.
What's the debate on RBIs?
It is RBI.
You want to bring this one up?
Well, what RBI
I'm
runs?
Ready to go.
Because it's what runs.
RBI.
Because it's runs batted in.
Yes, RBI.
But I say it. RBIs.
Yes, he's got 75 RBIs.
Right. Oh, no. So, he has 75 runs batted in.
Yeah, but suppose you don't want to say runs
RBI.
Batted in. Yeah,
but you always...
Yeah. We had this discussion last year.
I know that. I'll just bring it up. But people may not have listened last year, so we can do it again this year.
You know, the other one they brought up, too, is like other interesting plural ones. Like you would say the Marlins are a bad team, but the plural of Marlin is still Marlin. Like if you're catching... Like I went fishing today.
Right.
I caught four marlin. Like that is the plural of marlin. But we would all throw the S on it for no reason.
And then Stanford screws everything up by taking the S off of their name. It's just the Cardinal.
You know, the Maple Leafs are still the Maple Leafs and not the Maple Leaves.
It's not the Cardinals? It's not the Cardinals?
Not Stanford.
Well, the Cardinal, yeah, but
what if
St. Louis Cardinals?
Plural for a Stanford player?
I mean, the Toronto... If you said Matt Sundin and Austin Matthews were both great
Maple
Leaves, that's not it, but that's plural
the Leafs.
Technically, too.
I never thought of
L-E-A-F-S,
that.
L-E-A-F-S, Leafs.
And the Timberwolves.
Yeah,
but
Timberwolves.
One of them is not a Timberwolf. So, I mean, this is very – there's other teams that do this, too. What if you say
– a pack of wolves.
This brought this up, too. The Heat and Magic.
Yeah.
He was a Magic, and then he played for the Magic again.
Right.
That's another one.
That's their
weird.
Own fault. They keep coming
the
up with new
police.
Nicknames without S's at the end just to mess with us, like the Jazz.
Yeah.
The Jazzes. I mean, what's Jazz? That's really screwed up.
The Jazz-Eye. Yeah,
the Jazz. I think that's it.
Like
there,
fungi.
Right? All right, Brady, what's coming up at Checkpoint Valley Game Night?
We got lots to get to. Ken Pomeroy, the founder of the Ken Pom rankings. He's going to stop talk UVM basketball, and we're going to talk with America East Commissioner Amy Huchthausen.
All right, for intern Logan.
That's right.
Well
all right.
Done.
Any other interns?
Nathan.
Oh, intern Nathan was here.
Actually, nope, it was just intern Logan.
Okay, just intern Logan. Forget intern Nathan. For Brady, for Rich, I'm Arnie. Champaign Valley Game Night coming up next right here on 101.3 ESPN.
The only full-time FM sports station in Vermont. WCPV, Essex, Burlington, Plattsburgh. 101.3 ESPN.
The Boston Red Sox officially have J.D. Martinez inking the slugging outfielder to a five-year deal, $110 million. That's the ceiling on the contract, and there also is an opt-out after 2 years, which we knew, but there is also now an opt-out after 3 years, which is unknown to us yesterday when that deal officially broke around this time just 24 hours ago. To make room for Martinez on the 40-man roster, the Red Sox have traded outfielder Bryce Brentz. He led the International League in home runs last year with 39. The 29-year-old will go to the Pittsburgh Pirates for cash considerations. The Yankees, well, they appear to be all smiles down in Tampa. Aaron Judge and Giancarlo Stanton taking batting practice for the first time together yesterday and repeating that feat again today. Should the Patriots, will the Patriots have trouble landing key free agents in the offseason? That's the thought of one ESPN personality. Stephen A. Smith says free agents should avoid Bill Belichick's team because of how Belichick treated Malcolm Butler in Super Bowl 52. And Ryan Donato, Bruins prospect, had two goals for Team USA and helped Team USA advance to the quarterfinals of the 2018 Winter Olympics. What will he do at the conclusion of those Olympics? We found out from Tom Karen of Nesson. You can find that out on 1013ESPN.com. Champlain Valley Game Night is next as we enter the Cat's Den right here on 1013ESPN.